And let's just turn and read half the chapter, but we'll be commenting, of course, from the other verses. We'll read verses 1 to 14 of Daniel chapter 8. Daniel chapter 8, verses 1 to 14. In the third year of the reign of King Belshazzar, a vision appeared unto me, even unto me, Daniel, after that which appeared unto me at the first. And I saw in a vision, and it came to pass when I saw that I was at Shushan in the palace, which is in the province of Elam, and I saw in a vision, and I was by the river of Ulai. Then I lifted up mine eyes and saw, and behold, there stood before the river a ram, which had two horns, and the two horns were high, but one was higher than the other, and the higher came up last. I saw the ram pushing westward and northward and southward, so that no beasts might stand before him, neither was there any that could deliver out of his hand. But he did according to his will and became great. And as I was considering, behold, as a he-goat, a male goat, came from the west on the face of the whole earth and touched not the ground. And the goat had a notable horn between his eyes. And he came to the ram that had two horns, which I had seen standing before the river, and ran unto him in the fury of his power. And I saw him come close unto the ram, and he was moved with choler against him, or with great rage against him, and smote the ram and broke his two horns. And there was no power in the ram to stand before him, but he cast him down to the ground and stamped upon him, and there was none that could deliver the ram out of his hand. Therefore the he-goat waxed very great, and when he was strong, the great horn was broken, and for it came up four notable ones towards the four winds of heaven. And out of one of them came forth a little horn, which waxed exceeding great toward the south and toward the east and toward the pleasant land. And it waxed great even to the host of heaven, and it cast down some of the host of the stars to the ground and stamped upon them. Yea, he magnified himself even to the prince of the host, and by him the daily sacrifice was taken away, and the place of his sanctuary was cast down. And a host was given him against the daily sacrifice by reason of transgression, and that cast down the truth to the ground, and that practiced and prospered. Then I heard one saint speaking, and another saint said unto that certain saint which spoke, how long shall be the vision concerning the daily sacrifice and the transgression of desolation, to give both the sanctuary and the host to be trodden underfoot? And he said unto me, unto 2,300 days, then shall the sanctuary be cleansed. We are in great detail here now of the vision that Daniel, or the dream that Daniel interpreted for Nebuchadnezzar in Daniel chapter 2. That was very, very general. And as we saw a fortnight ago, the detail of those four kingdoms, and further detail again regarding two of them, regarding Persia and Greece. But we have two men here, two historical figures. They're not mentioned by name, but they're certainly implied. And that is Alexander the Great and Antiochus Epiphanes. We'll see more about that in a moment or two. But we've read these first 14 verses, which gives the details of the vision And then in verses 15 to 27, we see its definition. And you can see from the outset that Daniel is not in chronological order, because the first verse here says, in the third year of the reign of King Belshazzar. Chapter 7, verse 1 says, in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon. But yet we read of Belshazzar's demise in chapter 5. So these two chapters, the content of these two chapters comes before Daniel chapter 5. We're talking about in and around 550 BC. You can see the geography here in verse 2, where Daniel says that I was in Shushan, the palace in the province of Elam, and I saw him in the vision that I was by the river Ulai. The river Ulai was maybe around 220 miles east of Babylon. So here we see, and again let's remind ourselves of this, that this is the future according to Daniel, but to us it's history. These are four future powers from his standpoint, but they're historical powers from our standpoint. Now, I like to try and keep things simple for myself, and then when you're trying to preach these things, and always like an outline, and it helps me to know where I'm going with this. But this is a chapter about horns. I remember 2 weeks ago when I was here and we did chapter 7, and I made the remark then that our eyes are on the border of Russia and Ukraine, and we don't know what's going to happen there. And 2 weeks on, look what has happened there. There's a wee horn in the Kremlin who is seeking to show his power. And these horns that are here are just examples of horns throughout history. Jesus said 2,000 years ago, you shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. Kingdom shall rise against kingdom, nation against nation. But these are the beginning of sorrows. And the last days have been this past 2,000 years. And maybe the coming of the Lord is near. Or maybe what is happening is just a continuation of the sorrows that people experience in this life. But it's certainly having a major impact upon the world, isn't it? And it may be a long way off from us, but the cost of things, the cost of fuel, oil for the house or any building has absolutely rocketed. 2 weeks ago I got oil in Ballymena, £315. It's £535 now. It's up over £200 in 2 weeks. And is it going to stop? So we might be hit economically. We don't know these things. But first of all, let's see eight powerful horns. Because you've eight horns here. Some are stronger than others. Some have more influence than others. But you've eight horns. You've two in verses 3 and 4. Then I lifted my eyes and saw, and there standing beside the river was a ram which had two horns. And the two horns were high, but one was higher than the other, and the higher one came up last. I saw the ram pushing westward, northward, and southward, so that no animal could withstand him, nor was there any that could deliver from his hand. But he did according to his will and became great. Now this is identified in verse 20. The ram which you saw having the two horns, they're the kings of Media and Persia. So that's easy identified because it gives us the definition of these horns. So two horns in verses 3 and 4, one horn in verses 5 to 7. And as I was considering, suddenly a male goat came from the west across the surface of the whole earth without touching the ground, which is a suggestion of the rapidity of just how fast he overcame the ram. And the goat had a notable horn between his eyes. Then he came to the ram that had two horns, which I had seen standing beside the river, and ran at him with furious power. And I saw him confronting the ram. He was moved with rage against him, attacked the ram, and broke his two horns. And that was the end of the Medes and the Persians and their domination. There was no power in the ram to withstand him, but he cast him down to the ground and trampled him, and there was no one that could deliver the ram from his hand. And that identification is given in verse 21. And the male goat is the kingdom of Greece. The large horn that is between its eyes is the first king. So that was the Grecians overpowering the Medes and the Persians. So two horns in verses 3 and 4, one in verses 5 to 7. And then you have four horns in verse 8. Therefore the male goat grew very great, and when he became strong, the large horn was broken. And in place of it, four notable ones came up toward the four winds of heaven. And this is what happened after the death of Alexander the Great. The kingdom was divided into four. Four of Alexander's generals dominate a segment of his kingdom. Cassander, these names will not mean anything to you, but these are the four. Cassander was over Macedonia and Greece. Lysimachus, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing these names correct or not, but he was over Thrace and Asia Minor. Seleucus was over Syria and Mesopotamia, and Ptolemy in Egypt. So there you have two horns, one horn, four, that's seven. Then here's the eighth horn. Verses 9 to 12. One of these four horns came a little horn, which grew exceedingly great toward the south, toward the east, and toward the glorious land or the pleasant land. But we're talking about Israel. And that grew up to the host of heaven, and that cast down some of the host and some of the stars to the ground and trampled them. And that implies the persecution of God's people. He even exalted himself as high as the prince of the host. This prince is identified as a title for God. Daniel is the only one to use that title of God as the prince of the host. Many times we read of the Lord of hosts, but here the prince of the host, and by him the daily sacrifices were taken away. That was Jewish worship in the Old Testament. That's how they approached God. That's how their sins were forgiven. But by him, by this little horn, the daily sacrifices were taken away, and the place of his sanctuary was cast down. Because of transgression, an army was given over to the horn to oppose the daily sacrifices, and he cast truth down to the ground. He did all this and prospered. So this little horn, again, it's identified, verses 23 to 26. And in the latter time of their kingdom, when the transgressors have reached their fullness, a king shall arise having fierce features, who understands sinister schemes. His power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. He shall destroy fearfully and shall prosper and thrive. He shall destroy the mighty and also the holy people. Through his cunning, he shall cause deceit to prosper under his rule, and he shall exalt himself in his heart. He shall destroy many in their prosperity. He shall even rise against the prince of princes. There's God again. He shall rise against the prince of princes, but he shall be broken without human means. This is a little horn, or a small horn, but a sinister horn, a savage horn. Maybe the worst horn of the eight. Left to the last to be described. And of course, these horns are symbolisms for rulers, for men. And there's more about this little horn, Antiochus. There's even more. He's introduced to us here in chapter 8, but there's more detail given of him in chapter 11. So we have eight powerful horns. But I want you to see, secondly, two prominent men. Because as I said, we're talking about Alexander the Great, and we're talking about Antiochus the Fourth, Epiphanes. So what about this Alexander the Great? He ruled from 356 to 323 BC. He was a general of the Greek army at 21, and he had virtually conquered the world, the then known world, by the age of 26. In chapter 2, verse 39, it says, a third kingdom of bronze which shall rule over all the earth. He was the bronze kingdom. And one has said, in a period of 10 years, from 333 to 320 BC, he swept across the Middle East, slicing through the Persian Empire like a knife through butter. And that's why Daniel is described as this male goat. Its feet didn't touch the ground. Greek language and culture spread. And because his feet didn't touch the ground, it signifies the rapidity of Alexander's conquests, while the expression "the surface of the whole earth" speaks of their enormity. And then we have Antiochus the Fourth, Epiphanes. He was born about 140 years after Alexander. And so you can see that Daniel is covering many years. This is about 140 years after Alexander was born, identified in verse 9. And out of one of them came a little horn, which grew exceedingly great toward the south, toward the east, and toward the pleasant land or the glorious land. He was particularly focused on Israel. Israel. He was a different mentality altogether. He is maybe one of the most evil men in the Bible. This little horn. Antiochus the Fourth, and he gave himself the name Epiphanes. And that signifies that he considered himself a manifestation of divine power. We have the Epiphany. Around Christmas time, the visit of the wise men is known as the Epiphany. And Antiochus the Fourth, Epiphanes. And as this man gained a reputation, the people gave him the name Epimedes, which means madman. And that's what people are saying about Vladimir Putin. He's lost all reason. He's mad. He's lost his senses. What's he doing this for? And verses 9 to 12, he targeted Israel toward the glorious land, and it grew up to the host of heaven. And it cast down some of the host and some of the stars to the ground and trampled them. He even exalted himself as high as the prince of the host, and by him the daily sacrifices were taken away. And the place of his sanctuary was cast down. That's all in Jerusalem. That's the temple. That's where Antiochus arrived. That's the desecration and the sacrilege that he committed. He was an evil man. Desecration. Mockery. He cast truth down to the ground. God's word was disregarded. And we've read verses 23 to 26. That's his life and actions summarized, but more in chapter 11. And one has said it was a time in Israel's history when truth was cast to the ground, and this evil man practiced evil without restraint and prospered in it. It was a period of unthinkable suffering for the people of God. All was darkness, and there seemed to be no light at all. And so throughout history you've had this man, Antiochus. You've, around that time as well, you'd Haman. Only mentioned in the book of Esther. He sought to destroy the Jews in the realm of Xerxes. And I've read somewhere that someone gave a figure that at the time that there was 15 million Jews in the realm at that time. Hitler murdered 6 million. That's the figure that's given. Haman was looking at 15 million. And all in one day. To wipe them out, not in a over a period of time, but in one day. But you know something in this chapter too? As well as seeing 8 powerful horns and 2 prominent men, we see 2 passing men. These men died. Alexander and Antiochus, they died young. They didn't die of natural causes either. It's as if the Lord just put his finger upon them. Verse 8 suggests the death of Alexander. Therefore the male goat grew very great, but when he became strong, the large horn was broken. That's the end of Alexander the Great. And in place of it, four notable ones came up towards the four winds of heaven. But the large horn was broken. He was only 33 years of age. How did he die? Again, a few quotes that I came across. Alexander died suddenly in 323 BC at the height of his power, and tragically still in his 30s. His early and debauched death at the age of 33. He was extremely worldly. He lived a debauched life. He died in his palace at Babylon in 323 after a brief illness following a short and merry time of godlessness and dissipation. Rumor had it that he poisoned himself. It is more probable that after having crowded into half the normal lifespan a score of lifetimes, Alexander burned himself out. What a way to end your life. And there's a mystery to this day. We don't know if he was murdered, he was poisoned, or he committed suicide. I remember reading somewhere too about Alexander that he said to one of his generals, he was lamenting. He says, I have no more worlds to conquer. He was never satisfied with what he had done. I see Alexander the Great in Mark 8 and verse 36. For what will it profit a man if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? I can see Alexander the Great in Galatians chapter 6, verses 7 and 8. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. For he who sows to his flesh, which Alexander certainly did, will of the flesh reap corruption. And I can see Alexander in that. Antiochus Epiphanes, his demise, his removal from this scene of time, is given in verse 25. Through his cunning he shall cause deceit to prosper under his rule, and he shall exalt himself in his heart. He shall destroy many in their prosperity. He shall even rise against the prince of princes, but he shall be broken. Without human means, so he wasn't going to be murdered. There's going to be no one else involved. He wasn't going to die in battle. It was going to be without human means. God was going to do it. This little horn, which was strong, which was sinister, which was savage, was going to be broken without human means. He was only 51 years old. How did he die? Again, I give a quote here. Antiochus died suddenly of natural causes, either from a fall or from a revolting physical corruption, an incurable disease. I've read that he was seized with a pain in his bowels for which there was no relief, and with sharp internal tortures. I've read he contracted an exceedingly painful disease accompanied by deep and unmitigated psychological anguish. This man had a miserable end to his life. God removed these two men when they were young men. Antiochus reminds me, I can see him in Job 20 verse 5, the triumphing of the wicked is short. 11 years. 11 years he caused grief and havoc. I can see him in Psalm 92 and verse 7. When the wicked spring up like grass, and when all the workers of iniquity flourish, it is that they may be destroyed forever. It's not going to be a good ending for these people. Oh, they think this is great. This is what life's about. You know, look at his life before he was broken. Through his cunning, he shall cause deceit to prosper under his rule. And he shall exalt himself in his heart. You can picture his arrogance and his pride. He shall destroy many in their prosperity. He shall even rise against the prince of princes. He mocked God. But as we have read, be not deceived. God is not mocked. He too reaped what he sowed in his 51 years. But he shall be broken without human means. And again, we are looking at Ukraine, and that wee man is not safe in Moscow. The Lord could step in there and he could be broken without human means. So we see eight powerful horns and two prominent men and two passing men. No matter how powerful these horns are, no matter what damage they've caused in the world, they're removed. And we're here this morning because the Prince of Hosts is still here. And we give him our worship because of one providential God. People ask, where's God when things go wrong? Even the other day, I was in a boots store, and some of the girls were saying there, you know, what about what's going on? What about Putin? What's God doing, Raymond? And I was seeking to give something, but I was cut off, and I just didn't want to know, really. God is where he always is. He's on his throne. He's the sovereign God. He's a God of providence. And what I was attempting to say was, well, God is where he always is. He's on his throne. And God has promised to us eternal life, a life of peace and joy, if we turn from our sins and come to know him. But because man has turned his back on God, rejected God, in the light of Romans chapter 1, God just leaves us to it and says, well, if that's the way you want things, see if you can live without me and be any happier than what I can give. And of course we know that man just makes a mess of things. But God is where he always is, on the throne, sovereignly ruling the universe from the magnificent to the minutest. Psalm 115 verse 3, but our God is in heaven, he does whatever he pleases. This must have encouraged Daniel to a certain extent, because in verse 9, it talks about the pleasant land, the glorious land, because the people are back in the land. And we'll see in chapter 9 in a few weeks' time, where Daniel knew, had that knowledge, that the people would return to the land. They're back in the land. They're practicing the daily sacrifices again. Although there's great persecution. But Alexander's death in verse 8, the large horn was broken. And one has said, this was done by the unseen hand of God. He merely stretched out and snapped the great horn, and it was broken forever. In verses 13 to 19, we see the duration and interpretation. It's as if Daniel overhears a conversation between two holy ones, most likely angels. Then I heard a holy one speaking, and another holy one said to that certain one who was speaking, how long will the vision be concerning the daily sacrifices and the transgression of desolation, the giving of both the sanctuary and the host to be trampled underfoot? And he said to me, for 2,300 days, then the sanctuary shall be cleansed. Are these literal days? 2,300 days is just over 6 years. Uh, 171 to 165, almost 6 years. And that was when this period of abominations took place. Chapter 11 outlines that. So I want to say the 2,300 figure tells us this is a rather long period, yet the fact that it is calculated in days means it is a definitely limited one. How did Daniel react to this? Verses 17 and 18 says, so he came near where I stood, and when he came, I was afraid and fell on my face. But he said to me, understand, son of man, that the vision refers to the time of the end. Not the time of the end of the world when Jesus comes, but the time of the end of the persecutions of Antiochus. Now, as he was speaking with me, I was in a deep sleep, with my face to the ground. But he touched me and stood me upright. So you can picture that, how Daniel felt, and what his reaction was. So we see eight powerful horns and two prominent men, but two passing men because of one providential God. But lastly, let's see this, one prudent servant, and that's Daniel. So verse 17 says he was afraid, he fell on his face, he was lying prostrate on the ground, he was in a deep sleep. But verse 27 says, and I, Daniel, fainted and was sick for days. And then we'll read something extraordinary. Afterward, I arose and went about the king's business. Daniel went back to his work. Whatever his work was, you know, I arose and went about the king's business. I was astonished by the vision, but no one understood it. So Daniel has been given this vision of the future. He can't really take it all in. He's sick for days, and after he feels better, he rises and he goes back to his work. I went about the king's business. How ordinary is that? How common every day is that? And what's that mean to you and me as Christians? As you go about your king's business, whatever your job is, how do we live our lives in the light of the knowledge that we've been given? I want to say it in view of what the future holds, we must live holy lives now. To walk in obedience, live in holiness. It's what the Christian knows. 2 Peter 3 verse 11 says, therefore, since all these things will be dissolved, what manner of persons ought you to be in holy conduct and godliness? To go about our everyday work, you see people, they live as if they're going to be here forever. They live because they think this is the only life that there is, so let's pack in as much as they can. You only live once, we hear. But those of us who have had our eyes open to these things, we know that there is eternity, that there is heaven or hell. And where will these people spend eternity? But we must go about our everyday business and work. As Paul said in Colossians 3, verses 22 to 24, bondservants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service, as men pleasers, but in sincerity of heart, fearing God. Not as men pleasers, but as God pleasers. And whatever you do, do it heartily, as to the Lord and not to men. I can see Daniel there. That's what he did. He did it heartily as to the Lord, not to men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance, for you serve the Lord Christ. So you can picture the Christian at his or her everyday work. And they have a knowledge of the things of God that other work colleagues don't have. That if that person doesn't, that lovely person that you have a coffee with at work, you have a break with, if they don't trust Christ as their Savior, they'll be in hell for all eternity. You have that knowledge. They don't have. Or they might have, but they're gambling with their lives. They don't realize that they could die suddenly, massive heart attack or whatever. But may we be as consistent and faithful as Daniel was. This is chapter 8 of Daniel. Alexander and Antiochus. And may the Lord bless his word to your hearts. And we'll come to chapter 9, God willing, in a few weeks' time. Let's sing then Psalm 79, verses 5 to 9, to the tune Crimond. That's the Lord's my shepherd, isn't it? Crimond. Verses 5 to 9, how long, Lord, shall thine anger last? Wilt thou still keep the same? And shall thy fervent jealousy burn like unto a flame? And Antiochus, those 10 years or 11 years, I'm sure the people of God were wondering in those years, how long is this going to last for? When, you know, when's God going to do something to this evil man? And God, in his own time and in his own way, did do something to that evil man. as God sees to all horns that arise and seek to have authority in the world. So Psalm 79, verses 5 to 9.